And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
But are you really?
I am. I am indeed.
Today is May 31st, 2026. And let's see, free advertisement of the week goes to Sleep Number.
Sleep Number.
Sleep Number. Sleep Number gets my vote this week. My back has been out. It's been ugly. And so if I didn't have my sleeping number bed, I would not be here, actually. I tried to rope Alex into being us today because I was potentially going to be gone.
It would have been fun, but we can still have fun.
We're still gonna rope you in at some point in the future. I was supposed to be out of town, but couldn't sit in the car that long, so you can't leave if you can't sit in the car, right? So anyway, yeah, thanks to my sleep number bed. Yay. And I guess if you tell them Erin Ryan sent you, they give you a discount. My sister learned about that. So I got a free pillow, and she got a discount on her bed. So anyway, if you've never gone in and done the sleep number experiment, you should. It's pretty fun, actually. That's how we wound up with a bed. So fair warning. You go in, you try it, you go, yeah, definitely need to do that. So today, we are yet again discussing our favorite topic of the California gas disaster. We called it gas crisis, but I might have to change it and just call it gas disaster. We do have a direct domain set up for you at gascrisis.org that takes you directly to the We the People site with all of the interviews with our experts, and you also, we're going to reference some letters from some of the refineries today. Those are printed on there, not just the content, but actual photocopy of the letters from the refiners. And that is mostly all from the announcement standpoint. Let's see, we have with us, I believe, we have Mike Ariza with us. He's out of Chico. He is a Navy veteran. Thanks, Mike. And he is a refinery guy. He's the refinery guy in the team. I called this episode actually the assessment from the dream team. I wasn't totally sure who we would wind up with, so I was like, well, let's just shoot long. I think we have Professor Michael Boucher from USC on there. It turns out that our friend Ron Stein from a previous program we had in March this year knows these guys too. And so I have all their bios up and all that. Let's see, Mr. Stein. He's an engineer. He's got several books here, and I like his books. Energy Made Easy. God knows there's nothing about this that's easy. The more these guys talk about it, the more you're like, I don't know anything. I know gas doesn't really come out of the pump, but really that trip between oil out of the ground and gas in your car, there's a lot going on there. So he has Helping Citizens Understand a World Without Fossil Fuels, the Just Green Electricity. I think that's absolutely worth a read. And let's see, the newest one, and I have it, it's too small in here, Clean Energy Exploitations, Helping Citizens Understand the Environmental and Humanity Abuses that Support Clean Energy, which really fits in with pretty much everything we talk about on this show. Because honestly, for all those people who think, I have an electric car, I don't care if we run out of fuel. Yeah, well, good luck to you, because our grid in California can't support the charging of your magic electric car. So, spoiler alert, that won't be the end of the bad news. It'll just be the end of my bad news. Alex has provided us with some very good music. The Irish, it turns out, have come up with a solution to the gas crisis. And it'll unveil itself through the musical interludes we intersperse here at the breaks. So, spoiler alert on that. Who wants to be the kickoff today?
Well, this is Ron Stein. I'll pick it off.
Ron Stein? How the heck are you? We haven't talked to you in 2 months.
I know. It's been a long time. Yeah, that book, Clean Energy Exploitation, that was nominated for Pulitzer Prize.
Was it really? And, I need to put it out on there.
Yes. Yes, it basically talks about all the exotic minerals and metals to build those batteries, the lithium and cobalt. It's coming from China and Africa. They've got no labor laws. They've got no environmental laws. And they're exploiting people with yellow, brown, and black skin to mine for this stuff. And the environmental degradation is atrocious. And, it's bad news for the rest of the poor countries because the wealthy countries are going green.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not really working out. I mean, you look at what we're doing here, and I don't know. I mean, we have the whole windmill thing. That's a whole another deal. But all of it is intermittent. So replacing good, solid fuel sources that we have that are abundant in the state of California by choking them off with regulation, not our brightest idea.
Mike and Michael can step in. But the Air Resources Board approved for change on Friday, and it's going to be devastating to the economy and the national security risk for America. Because California, let's understand, California, we're an energy island. We're separated from the other 49 states by the Sierra Mountains. And we're pipelines over the mountains. So all the fuel consumed in California is made in California. And we've had two refineries shut down. So we're in a position today that we can't make enough fuel for what's being consumed in California. And with the Air Resources Board putting a hammer on the refineries, the seven refineries that are left, they're probably going to start disappearing too. And if they start disappearing, you have to understand, California, we're a big state. We've got 9 international airports, 30 military airports, and collectively they're consuming 13 million gallons of jet fuel every day. And if we can't make it here in California, it's going to be made somewhere else, offshore. And it might be refineries in China that are going to be supplying the fuel to California. And that is a national security risk for America, to have our military bases in California and our 9 international airports depending on jet fuel being made in China, because we can't make it here.
So hypothetically, if we're going to have to import all our gasoline from South Korea, India, I mean, if these refineries close down and we have to import everything, what do you think that's going to do? I mean, what are we looking at for a gallon of gas?
Well, my comment is it doesn't matter what it costs. If you can't get it, you can't get it.
There you go.
It's going to be devastating to the drivers, but we're talking military bases, not the operating.
Right. Right.
Doesn't matter what it costs. If you have no fuel, you're not going to operate.
Yeah, and you're also not going to have trucks on the road bringing food to the grocery stores and all of those good things. And so the refiners, at different points in time, sent letters to the California Air Resources Board highlighting the fact that their regulatory plans, how about that, were going to cause problems. Let's see, the first one was PBF sent a letter February 25th of this year, followed by
Chevron,
yeah, March 3rd. So, close second,
and then,
and March 9th was Marathon. The, between those three, that's 6 out of the 7 remaining refineries that said, and the letters are on there, I would encourage people to go read them.
I got, Aaron, I got highlights of the highlights. I took condensed real quickly on PBF.
Yeah.
They said the current CNI Cap and Invest stationary source program is untenable and must be addressed to ensure survival of the state's remaining refineries. If enacted as written, the proposed amendments will inevitably drive in-state refining capacity to zero. If the state fails to address inequities between in-state refiners and importers, refinery closures will accelerate and the feasibility of the state's fuel supply will come into question. Unless CARB puts in-state refineries on equal footing with importers, we will be forced to address the viability of our in-state operations along with every other refiner in the state. The Marathon letter, the big highlight, as written, CARB's proposal would further widen the cost disparity, forcing refineries to consider whether operations in California remain viable. And then Chevron, on their letter, one of the big highlights is Chevron is deeply concerned, and this is from Andy Waltz directly, Chevron is deeply concerned and strongly opposes the California Air Resource Board's CARB proposed amendments to the cap and invest regulation. The proposed regulation will cripple, that is cripple, the survivability of the state's remaining refineries, which will result in California losing the entire industry to this misguided program. With this, an estimated 536,770 jobs supported statewide by the petroleum industry will be put at risk if these proposals are finalized in their current form.
Wow.
And, dot, 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 were they finalized in their current form?
Yes.
No, not actually. They were modified on Friday.
Hello, Professor Miche.
Professor Miche, yeah. They were modified on Friday. But nonetheless, so they're not nearly as draconian. Well, they're not as draconian as they were in the original form, but nonetheless, they did pass a modified version of that. And so we're all getting the verbiage of it, and we're starting to get the data, and we'll try to figure out how much it will impact consumer prices. But nonetheless, it once again is, as California's facing a truly catastrophic fuel situation that's emerging, and we haven't felt it yet, and we will start feeling it very soon. We're passing more regulations on the industry. It makes it more difficult for them to operate, more difficult for them to make any money, and less attractive for anybody to want to invest in the state. So I'm reading some of the CARB comments about what they passed, and then some of the environmental comments that came back against that. So
And what's the gist of that?
Well, the environmentalists are upset because the proposed cost, it looks like, are going to be cut in half. Nonetheless, there's going to be significant cost increases, okay,
mm-hmm.
as a result of this, but not as bad as we all had thought under the original idea. So the environmentalists are saying, gee, you're dropping the quarterly auction revenue from about $4 billion a year now to $2 billion as a result of this. Okay, now where does that money go? It doesn't go into roads. It doesn't go back to the refineries to operate cleaner, okay, or any of the gas stations or any of the pipelines. It goes to the following, the high-speed rail project, affordable housing, drinking water in low-income communities, and pollution monitoring in California's most polluted neighborhoods. That's where that money is being spent. Not being spent on refinery updates or any technical advances in pipelines or to do anything to increase California's production or moderate California's pricing. But it does go to, 25% goes to a high-speed rail project, another 20% goes to something called affordable housing and sustainable communities. Not quite sure what that means, but
which has nothing to do with supposedly all this environmental regulatory stuff to,
No, and the California Legislative Analyst's Office actually wrote a report, and they cited a couple of studies, and they said, look, there's no scientific evidence that cap and trade, now called cap and investment, these costs, have any impact and have had any impact on greenhouse emissions. Well, they wouldn't, because the money is being spent on other things. If the money was collected and a portion of that went back to the refineries and producers for decarbonization and carbon sequestration, then you might have a direct cause and effect. But because this money is just dispersed on, honestly, social engineering programs, there is no cause and effect. So there is no reduction in greenhouse emissions that are associated with this. So you can call the refiners and call the producers polluters all day long, as the environmentalists do, but show me the amount of greenhouse reduction that has been achieved by the California High-Speed Rail Project. And that thing's been going on for, what, 20 years?
Yeah. Yeah, and no track has been laid.
Not yet.
Wow. I don't know.
One thing that environmentalists don't understand, I think the Air Resources Board does not understand, is modern society runs on refined oil products. Because oil, we know by itself, is useless. It's black tar. You know, unless you build a multi-billion-dollar refinery and they beat it and they beat it and they crack it and do all these crazy things to it to get transportation fuels for planes and ships and trucks and cars and construction equipment. In all the materials that we have in our daily lives. The 6,000 products we have in our daily lives didn't exist 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Before oil. But oil by itself is useless black tar. But they're beating up on oil. But, you know, where do you get the products if you can't refine it here?
Right.
Well, as I say, thanks, Ron, for getting us in that direction. But, you know, as I note a lot, is oil production is 10%. Oil and refinery production is 8% of the California economy, flat out. But it's the first 8%. If you don't have oil and gasoline production, you're really not going to get the other 92%. So it's fundamental. It's essential. Right. It's essential to the economy to have it. And until you have replacements, renewables and alternatives at scale and at affordable prices, well, we're going to be using petroleum.
Right.
And as I told my students in class...
Renewables only generate electricity. Wind turbines are nothing for society.
Right. You're not going to pave a road with renewables because you need petroleum for that. You're not going to make concrete.
What?
You're not going to
you
make
mean windmills don't make asphalt?
No, and, you know, there is this sustainable aviation fuel initiative that California has. Well, the refinery that makes that stuff, which is located in Northern California, is losing millions of dollars a year on it. It's just not an economically viable product, and it doesn't have scale, and honestly, doesn't have a great market.
We shouldn't probably say that out loud because that seems to be what makes them want to mandate it. We don't have it at scale. It's not really working. It's super expensive. Definitely let's mandate that because that would be a genius move. Fellas, we have to take a really quick break, and just want you to know, Professor, we were going to try to lure you into staying longer, and unless you stay through the hour, you won't find out how the Irish have solved the gas crisis, but here's the first installment for you. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Pump number 4 was weeping on his knees. He offered up his wedding ring for a sup of diesel, please. But the nozzle is a highwayman, a robber in a mask. And the taxman's got his greedy straw into every single flask. Oh, it's an arm and a leg just to keep the tank fed. So I'm tipping a keg of the Guinness instead. Tell the lads in the desert and take their golden barrels and to shove them in the pump. I'm done with the petrol, I'm done with the gas. They can take their high prices and kiss me rosy ass. I'm filling the tank with the cream of the stout. And I'm running on Guinness till the barrels run out. I marched into the local pub and bypassed every pump. I grabbed a stainless steel keg and gave the tap a thump. The barman said, "You're thirsty, Mick." I said, "It's for the car." And I rolled that barrel out the door to get my car to start. I popped the flap, I pulled the plug, I let the black stuff flow. You should have heard the engine, she was raring to go. She didn't hum, she didn't purr, she let out a mighty roar. And I kicked myself with regret, I didn't think of it before.
Yep. Yep. My dreams have all come true. Guinness is going to save the world.
Well, with that one, I'm going to stay another half an hour.
Yeah,
I got my curiosity.
You
got
to find out what happens at the end.
Got to find out what happens at the end.
Oh, I have this terrific shirt, too. I got it for St. Patrick's Day. It has a big glass of Guinness on it, and it says, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." So maybe we need stickers for the cars.
Well, Chevron has some great stickers we should be putting on the cars, or certainly on every gas pump in the state of California, right?
I love their signs. Are we talking about the end cap graphics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
just excited that they're fighting back, because, you know, what happens most of the time is, you know, they figure, oh, they'll be worse to us if we fight them. And it's like, really? How much worse could it get? You might as well fight them.
Yeah, they're already worse.
Yeah, might as well fight them.
It could get worse, because the renewable enthusiasts do not understand that electricity came after oil. Let me repeat that. It came after oil, because we got six phases of general electricity. We do wind, solar, coal, natural gas, hydro, nuclear. But all six phases of general electricity are similar. They all have wire and insulation and computers, which are made from the products we get from refined oil. So if you get rid of oil, you get rid of electricity. We're back to the 1800s.
Yeah. So with the regulatory deal, since most people aren't going to go read all the regulations and stuff, what exactly did they want? And do you have any idea why they wanted it? Was this just another way to extort more money from corporation and demonize them? Or demonize them and then extort more money?
Well, you need to, I think that's the short answer is yes. You know, when you take a look at what the money is being spent on, again, let's take a look at affordable housing, right?
Mm-hmm.
High-speed rail, which is, quote, transit-related development meant to reduce driving and climate pollution.
That has laid not one inch of track.
Correct. Wildlife resilience. Code. Well, I screwed up last year, so I need wildfire type production, wildfire resilience, right?
Okay.
Clean drinking water in poor communities, and neighborhood pollution monitoring. Okay, that's what they're spending the money on. Now, keep in mind that the high-speed rail project alone receives $1 billion a year.
For no track.
Man, what the heck are they doing with $1 billion a year?
Yes, they're in line.
Well, they're keeping a lot of the trades employed. Okay, there's a lot of, and we learned that in the SB 1035 hearing, when opposing opinions came forward, and it was the labor unions that were adamantly against reducing or eliminating cap and trade, and in particular, because they know that $1 billion of cap and trade goes to the high speed rail project, and you know they're employing unions, and they're employing building and construction folks. So they were adamantly against reducing the price of gasoline for the rest of California out of the fact that they wanted to maintain this funding going to the high speed rail project for their membership. And you know, that makes sense. That's their job.
Yeah. And as long as it never gets built, they'll be employed forever. What a great idea.
They'll be employed forever. A lot of us view that project as a generational project. Okay. It's one of those that, you know, you just sort of wink wink and you know, when you retire, your kid takes over. So that's what a lot of us look at that.
Sure. The water, one of the water projects people might be interested to know, the water board is doing a study up in the cartel marijuana grows in Siskiyou County to see if they need wells or have water brought in. They're they're looking at providing them water. Now, they don't own homes. There have been no home permits taken out, no septic permits, chemicals and sewage going right on the ground. And this is over multiple miles of area. It's not just a one small little tract of land. And the state is providing them water. So, you know, it's no big deal that they're all breaking the law and you have human trafficking and murder and chemical contamination and all that. But now we're going to pay for their water and study how to get them more so they can grow more dope. It's unbelievable.
Hmm.
So people fill up their car. You can think about that. Gosh.
Well, I think, you know, going back to Chevron, I think there should be a referendum on a California ballot. Okay. The one piece of law that should be passed is the retail outlets where you buy the gasoline should have a prominent label on the pump that shows all of the taxes and fees and regulatory costs associated with a gallon of gasoline. Californians pay approximately $1.25 a gallon in state taxes, local taxes, and regulatory fees. And it's going up on July 1st, and it's going to go up again as a result of CARB's amended regulations. So, you know, as I mentioned in my testimony, if the price of crude oil was zero, California would still be paying the highest gasoline prices in the country because it has the highest regulatory costs in the country. And I think this is something that Californians need to start really paying attention to. Because when you look at the division, what we call the differential between the average national retail price of fuel and the California price of fuel, California was always higher. And again, I went all the way back to 1971. But it really began to accelerate in 2015. Now, the narrative is, well, there was a refinery fire in Torrance, and the prices went up, and the refiners are price gouging. The prices never came back down. That's incorrect. The prices did go up. The prices did come back down. But what kicked in was cap and trade. And once cap and trade kicked in, the differential between California average retail price and the United States retail price grew and grew and grew and accelerates each year because of cap and trade and CARB's influence. So these are mathematical relationships. They're indisputable. But I think the folks ought to take a serious look at Chevron gasoline and scan that code and get a really good education on what is the cost of how much California regulatory costs are in that tank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was in New Orleans a couple weeks ago and I gassed up premium was $4 a gallon. I gassed up today here in Orange County, it was $6.50 a gallon.
Well, you're ahead of me, partner. And by the way, it was a blast sharing the Dias with you in our seminar and our presentation. But $7.29 per premium where I live.
Oh wow,
that's what I'm paying.
Whoa.
Damn.
Whoa.
Yeah, $7.29. That's what I'm paying.
Wow.
I mean, so
part of the differential, besides all these taxes, is there's a push to get zero emissions out of these refineries, which is driving up a lot of their costs. But refineries around the world don't have the same environmental laws we do. So
yes.
You build a refinery in China or India, wherever, they don't have emission controls like we do. And I think we're breathing the same air.
Yeah, you're making a terrific point as usual, partner. So clearly, the refineries in India and South Korea, China, and the producers in Iraq for crude oil, their emission standards they don't have any compared to California. So they're operating way outside any normal distribution curve that California would have for greenhouse emissions. But here's the problem. They don't pay cap and trade. They don't pay any of the premiums that are levied on the California refiners that they don't pay them. So the problem is, and it's pointed out in the letters, is you're forcing us to operate, and we're doing it, and we're paying this amount. But you're importing vast amounts of oil and gasoline from operators who don't pay that amount. So it's really inequitable from our standpoint, and if you keep adding this to us, then frankly, it's no longer a viable state to do business in, and you can get all of your oil from Iraq, and you can get all your gasoline from India and South Korea until you have another Strait of Hormuz problem. So this is the problem. It's inequitable tax structure on refineries. And, you know, they're paying the cap and trade fee. They'll complain about it, but they pay it, and it's reflected in the price of gasoline at the pump. But at the same time, the foreign suppliers and refiners and crude producers aren't paying any of this.
Yeah, how do they justify that? I mean, to charge the local guys, but not the import guys.
Well, you know, it's the same way that they measure greenhouse emissions on maritime tankers, right? California won't measure the emission of a tanker. So if we're bringing in, say, jet fuel from India, which we're doing now, they don't measure the emissions of that maritime tanker from the time it leaves India all the way across the Pacific Ocean until it gets within 12 miles of California. Then when it gets within 12 miles of California, what happens is all of these tankers will switch to their low carbon fuel standard, and California measures the emissions from 12 miles out in. But they'll forget about the other 4,200 miles that it travels.
Right.
So, you know, it's not even a double standard. It's just an inappropriate and inequitable standard. And it doesn't really give you a great basis for any type of policy making or parity of that. So, it's we're going to fit the data and the methods of collecting it and reporting it. We're gonna do it so it best supports our narrative. And our narrative is environmental leadership.
Well, the environmental leadership is limited to California borders. Because as you mentioned, refineries in foreign countries don't have environmental controls that we have. And the ships coming across a whole month across the ocean, those emissions are outside the borders of California, so they don't count.
I don't count. But, you know, again, you know, you're right, Ron. I mean, I guess in Sacramento, there's this big invisible force field around California that you know, we don't get the pollution and the emissions from China and South Korea and these ships transiting across the Pacific Ocean. You know, somehow they're you know, evacuated from California airspace before they get here. So, there's some magic that goes on, I suppose, but you know, this is one of the major problems that we have. It's magic, right? And yeah. You know, this just makes it, you know, harder and harder and harder for people that are doing business in the state to continue to do business in the state. And again, as fuel supplies become more stressed, what's California doing? Increasing the regulatory purview over those. So rather than providing a method of increasing production and lowering costs and providing for national security, they've done exactly opposite. And so honestly, is it worth a fight in Sacramento anymore? Not for a lot of us. I think a lot of us have said, you know what, they're going to do what they're going to do. The only person who can fix this is President Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I'm really curious where you think we're headed with that. Let's do another installment of our Irish fix for the gas crisis, and then we'll come right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find a direct link on the gas crisis issue at gascrisis.com.
Not work. Started flashing, and the siren led a whale.
The guard pulled me over, saying, son, you're bound for jail. Your exhaust smells like a brewery, your tires are acting drunk, and you've got a suspicious foaming mess inside your feckin' trunk. Officer, have mercy, they have cleaned me pockets out. I can't afford to drive a car that isn't drinking stout. He took a sniff, he took a sip, he looked at his patrol. He said, pass me over the nozzle, lad, for the good of my poor soul. Oh, it's an arm and a leg just to keep the tank fed, so I'm tipping a keg of the Guinness instead. Tell the and I'm running on Guinness till the barrels run out. But the car began to sputter, and the car began to sway. For Guinness in the engine isn't built for the motorway. So I parked it in the bushes, and I threw away the keys. I bought a sturdy stallion, and he's faster than the breeze. I'm going back to the horse and cart, and I'm selling the SUV. I'm done with all the taxes and...
Well, there you go.
Oh, my God.
Get a trusty Steve.
That's too good.
It's fast.
I got to tell you, I love it. I just love it.
I'll have to send you the link for the song. Well, actually, it's on the page for today. I put the video on the page for today.
I think I'll play it in class.
You should. You should. They. It's... Honestly, I mean, all of this is so ridiculous. I know you guys get the same question I do, and maybe you have a better answer, but people keep asking, well, what are they trying to do? I'm like, I don't know.
Look, they collected, since this program began, right, which was in earnest, they've collected billions of dollars. Like $35 billion.
With the cap and trade thing?
Yeah.
Oh. $35 billion.
So Professor, you're not including all the other programs,
no,
regulations,
or minor paying
for. Just that.
Yeah. Just cap and trade. The quarterly auctions for emission allowances, which is cap and trade, is around $35 billion since 2012. The most they ever collected was back in 2023-24, which was $8.1
billion.
But it, you know, it is, for lack of anything else, it's a tax, okay? And the bullet train gets 25% of that by legislative action. That's it. They're automatic. They get $1 billion a year for that. There's no, again, there's no particular scientific evidence that any of this has actually reduced greenhouse emissions or improved the quality of air. I mean, certainly if you're improving the quality of drinking water, it doesn't really include greenhouse emissions, right? So, you know, it's generally viewed as a kind of a
scam?
I don't know, slush fund.
Oh, there you go.
For spending money in different ways and in different directions. And,
let me make a few comments about why Trump has to step in. Because California, we're the fourth largest economy in the world. And if we go down, the country goes down. And, you know, right now, we're in a situation that just on the jet fuel, forget about gasoline and diesel and other stuff, but just on jet fuel, just to keep the military running and the nine international airports, we can't rely on foreign refineries to provide that when we can produce them here. So we're a national security risk, and if one of the refineries goes down, because the ones that are left are huge, they're big guys, and that's going to be really devastating to California's economy and to the national security of the entire country. Besides,
well, they're big guys. Yeah.
I don't think we can import that.
They're
much
big
fuel.
Guys.
You know, it,
no,
as you, as
I don't think
point,
we can either.
Yeah, as you pointed out, there's seven refineries left. Six of them are the big guys, right? We call them the big three. That's 98% of all production right now in the state.
the seventh refinery is 2%.
So oh, wow.
If the big three decide to leave in any order whatsoever, and we've modeled it, several dozens of different models we've built for that, it has a devastating impact not only on the economy of California, agricultural production, grocery prices, and, of course, national security and force readiness. Mike and I, Azira and I, along with Stan Ellis, we wrote probably the first definitive piece of work on national security and California energy policies related to oil and gas, gasoline refineries, and crude oil production ever. And we only published the executive summary of that thing. Because when you get into the other 130 pages, you know, you don't want that going to foreign adversaries. So I think at this point, California it still has an adversarial relationship with the producers and the refiners. They are still on this basic environmental jihad. And then the issue then becomes, well, how do you remedy this? Because it's very clear that the inequity that's created by California policy, particularly on the refiners, is probably going to drive them out of state. Then what are you going to do?
Yeah. And do they have any, is that part of any of the discussion? Like, what if they leave? I mean, is the state even entertaining the idea that they might go, or are they just dismissing that out of hand?
I don't know what the state is doing. You know, but I can tell you that that discussion is quite robust in Washington, and the president even he referenced it in his cabinet meeting this past week. He referenced California by name, and so we know just by referencing it by name in a cabinet meeting, you know, it's moving up to the top of the agenda, and I would suspect that the president, you know, will probably take some action on this above and beyond what he did for Sable offshore production, which, by the way, adds 55,000 barrels a day of oil to California. Now, you know, the state says, well, that's nothing. It's only 1%. Well, it's 17% of last year's oil production coming from one provider.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, 17%. And Sable can go up to 70,000 barrels. They may even get 100,000 barrels a day. And let's just say they did 100,000 barrels a day today. I'm not saying they will do it, but let's just hypothetically. That's almost 50% of 2025 California production coming from one producer. So we have an abundance of oil. By any measure, the sixth largest reserves in the United States are proven, but unproven, we'd probably be in the top three. So given those reserves and given the urgency and the necessity for the economy and also for national security, and let's not forget, California supplies 88% of all the fuel to Nevada and about 40% to Arizona, yeah, you're probably going to get presidential intervention into this.
I understand that they can, that, you know, the federal side can intervene in the oil extraction. So, you know, you can drill here or there, you know, they can override some of that. But how do you square that with private companies that can't make a living? I mean, do they have the ability to override the California Air Board?
Well, it depends how you do it, okay?
Yeah.
So there is something called the Defense Production Act, okay, and that was passed back in 1950, and that gives the president sweeping powers, okay, to do a lot of things in the event of in the interest of national defense and national security and things like that.
Sure.
So that gives a lot of leeway for the president to do that. And there's a
And then you start with what President Trump did the day he was inaugurated. And the day he was inaugurated, he used the Defense Production Act, which, by the way, is codified as 81-774 public law. He issued Executive Order 14156 on the day he assumed office, which declared a national energy emergency. And what a lot of people don't remember or choose to forget is, under Joe Biden, we had an all-time highest gasoline prices ever in the United States. And in California, was at $6.42 a gallon. And subsequent to that order, and as we know, all the way through up until the Iranian situation, prices of gasoline fell. Then, a little bit later on, in March of 2026, President Trump issued Executive Order 14391, and that delegated DPA authority to the Secretary of Energy, who then instructed Sable to begin using offshore oil. So these orders can be designed, if you will, to address some of these broader and more, more broader issues and more significant issues for California as related to the U.S. economy and U.S. national defense. And I suspect, I know there's a lot of really smart people working on those literally today.
But Trump has stepped in to increase oil production, but as I mentioned before, oil by itself is useless black tar. Unless you can refine it into usable products, oil is useless. And that's the situation we're in right now with the seven refineries sitting in a bubble, and if one of them goes, I don't care how much oil you have, if you can't refine it here, we're a national security risk. That's where Trump's got to step in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have a very complex industry, as you well know. You have upstream, you have midstream, you have downstream. And in California's situation, it's sort of like a patient that's truly moving into a life support mode. And now you have to stabilize the patient before you do anything more drastic. So the question becomes, where do you begin stabilization? The easiest place to begin stabilization, honestly, is through production, because you have these vast oil reserves, and you can do a lot when you have oil reserves, and you can do a lot when you have production. Then you have to address the pipelines, then you have to address refineries. So, I always suspect that the president will probably take a comprehensive and integrative strategy on this. Can't speak for him, but I would probably venture to say that's the way it's going to go. And we've talked to California legislation about it. We've told the legislators, if you don't start fixing this, be prepared. President Trump is going to fix it. And they did nothing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Other than allow CARB to increase prices. So, it's sort of like, well, you had your chance, and you didn't do it.
Yeah, and then once he does step in,
they'll be hysterical.
Oh my gosh, the crying will be epic.
Yeah, the crying will be epic. The lawsuits will be crazy, but we'll see where all this shakes out. I believe the first major test is coming up next week in Federal District Court, Northern District of California, where our famous governor and our famous state attorney general sued Secretary Wright on this order, the first order, which instructed Sable to increase production. So we'll see where that goes. Whoever loses is going to appeal. We already know it's going to be appealed, whatever happens. But, it's not as sweeping. And then, what do you do with refineries? It costs small refineries $5 billion, a major refinery is $15 to $25 billion. Who's going to spend that money in California?
Right.
Who's going to spend it? So, you know, can you bring back the Valero refinery? Well, there's a lot of estimates that say, well, if you bring that up, it's going to be $800 million to $1 billion to reanimate that refinery. Who's going to do that under these prevailing conditions? So, you know, it's not as quick, it's not as easy as waving a wand. Everybody knows what has to be done. As Ron says, you got to bring this stuff up. But, you know, it's a very complex and delicate process to do that. It involves an awful lot of money and some significant legal issues involving states' rights and preemptive rights.
Well, and that was kind of what I was curious about. I was very curious about that, how we get around that and keep it constitutional. If you can hang with us, I have the last installment of the Gaelic Answer to the Gas Crisis coming right at you. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio.
.us.
I swapped the four-wheel drive for a four-legged friend instead, with a bit of hay and clover and a roof above his head. I'm trotting past the traffic to a happy Irish tune. Let the petrol prices climb until they hit the bloody moon.
Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Today is May 31st, 2025, and received a text message during the break that somebody who was working in the Registrar of Voters office in one of our counties here in California was noticing that a lot of people have voted for multiple gubernatorial candidates on one ballot where it clearly says vote for one. So they couldn't make a decision, and they voted for two. Just a hot tip for you in case you haven't filled your ballot out. And obviously, you, unless you're a time traveler, you haven't been to the polls because that happens on Tuesday. If you vote for two, none of them count.
Yeah, they throw it out.
So please stop doing
that. The whole ballot.
Yeah. So don't do that. Terrible idea. So it kind of threw me off track there. Momentito. So we want to know, fellers, we've got the dream team on here. So we have Mike Ariza, Professor Mike Mushape, perhaps, I don't know. Assemblyman Stan Ellis has joined us. Yes, yeah, I lured you in with the whole Guinness thing last hour, huh?
Hi there.
and our friend Ron Stein. So we're growing. We're growing our expert numbers here. Can you guys, whoever wants to kick it off, but talk about the Defense Production Act and how that comports with states' rights and, you know, private business and all that. I mean, you can't just take the refineries and tell them, here, you have to produce. I'm pretty sure we have constitutional prohibitions against that. How does this all dovetail together and make it so that we don't implode?
Well, take a look at one issue you have to think about. If one of the big refineries does go down, and the fuels can be, transportation fuels coming from foreign-based refineries, I don't think our ports have the capability to import that kind of fuel.
No, they don't.
The kind
I think
of volume that we're using. And so it's a catch-22. You know, if you lose a refinery, you know, where are you going to get the fuel? You can get it from foreign countries, but you don't have the capability to bring it in.
Right.
And that's a valid concern, because the Chevron El Segundo, one thing is, all these refineries, they're big, but they're old. And what caused the fire at Chevron and El Segundo was they simply missed a thin spot during inspection on a furnace on the Isomax unit, the jet Isomax unit. And those are running 1,500, 2,000 pounds, hydrogen jet, and, 600-700 degrees plus the furnace box. So once it goes off, it starts to open up. It's like an explosion. So you'll hear people, well, there was an explosion. There was some sabotage. No, it's just some of these refineries are old, and things like inspections can get missed. There are so many things that can take a refinery offline. This is within the realm of Realville here. And right now, if we had El Segundo or Richmond go down with the status that we're in, where we don't have tankers coming here from Asia and they haven't been coming here for a few weeks, this state is, my guesstimate, is going to be on its knees.
And the rest of the country with it.
Well, this is Professor Mashade. I don't know if you want to go back to the Defense Production Act.
Yeah,
and
we do.
Some of the primary things. Yeah. So, again, this was passed in 1950. It's been around in various forms before that, but 1950 was the formal introduction and passage of the Defense Production Act. And it basically, here's what it does, and maybe this will help a lot of the listeners. It gives the president really broad powers and authorities in matters related to domestic industry and national security. Okay? So it's confined to domestic industry and national security. And the three powers that it endows the president or bestows the president with is a power to direct and expand production and supplies as related to national security, a power to prioritize and allocate resources to ensure and enhance national defense, and the power to create and enter into contracts and agreements with private industry to make all that stuff happen. So when people start throwing around the National Defense Production Act, that's what it's designed to do, and these are the three powers that act by law bestows upon the president. It's not arbitrary. It's it's very distinct and it's very well defined. And so presidents have used that. All presidents have used that. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Nixon, Johnson, Carter. Every president has used it throughout time. Even Biden used it, I believe, to declare the need for solar panels. So bringing it to the forefront now is very, very important given the status of the declining issues confronting California. So that's what the DPA is all about.
Well, I really hope they don't have to do that. What do you think if we did get to that point? What do you think the response would be in California?
We've already used it.
Right.
The president has already used it. Okay, he's already used Executive Order 14156. All right, which is disable. Which was at the direction of the president, take essential steps to expand domestic production and California petroleum production under the DPA. So we've already used it. What we know happens is lawsuits result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, part of life. But I think given the status that we have and honestly the inability of the governor to either comprehend the situation, I'm going to give a lot of credit that he can't comprehend it.
Yeah.
And the inability of the legislature to address it and fix it.
Except for Stan.
And the fact that the producers are dying on the vine and the refineries have threatened to leave the state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd probably say the president has good basis to come in and address it before it gets any worse.
Yeah, considering the ramifications, if they do decide to pull the plug, at that point it's probably be too late.
Yeah, I mean, as Michael tell you, he lived in these refineries. He worked in them for years and years and years. But, I mean, it's not like, turning on a switch in your house. You can't turn off
right
and turn on a refinery, okay? It takes weeks, if not months, to shut it down properly. And then it takes weeks, perhaps even a year, to bring it up safely, depending on what you took out and all the other stuff. So, at this point, I think we've all established that California's in a very critical, borderline desperate situation. And then I think the California voter has to reconsider where the money's being spent off of a gallon of gasoline. So
these are some of the things that, you know, people are working on. Mm-hmm. Really smart people are working on.
Well, I think the actual oil production, I think we can get back, but if we don't have a way to refine it, it doesn't do us any good. Is that right?
Well, again, it's a holistic solution. You can't just pick the refineries. So if you bring up a refinery and you don't have in-state production, then you're back to importing a lot of oil to keep that refinery going, right?
Right.
And if you don't bring up the pipeline, then you're stuck with a lot of maritime. So, you know, the most logical place to start is with production. You've got to start with production because it doesn't matter if you have refineries and you don't have production. They're screaming about that now. When you talk to the refineries and you listen to their calls with their analysts, the Wall Street guys, they're all saying, you know, our supplies are getting pretty thin. And I believe ExxonMobil came out with a statement on Friday saying it's very, very critical at this point. So you can have refineries, but if you don't have product going to them, you don't have a refinery. So, start somewhere. The most logical place to start is with production, and once you have production, then you have something to work with. And as we said in December in one of our papers, you know, we said if you brought Sable up, you can move Sable oil south, and that's precisely what happened. And so we have that going to the southern refineries. Chevron took it. If you bring up the rest of the fields, okay, not only in Kern, but you're talking Ventura County, Monterey County, Kings County, Orange County, and Los Angeles County. You bring up those fields, then you're going to have a lot of oil going into the north-south pipeline. You have a different set of economics, and you might have oil going in. You certainly would direct at least 25,000 barrels a day of oil going into the M70 pipeline, which feeds the PBF refinery in Torrance. And you begin to have great stabilization and a one-for-one reduction on imports. If you were able to produce the recoverable oils in California and put them in the directed pipelines going to the directed refineries, you would reduce imports substantially.
Right.
Not by 3% or 20%. We're looking at an 80% drop in dependency on crude imports, and that would have a corresponding impact on jet fuel and gasoline production as well. But, you know, again, you're always going to have the issue of, you know, where do we start? You start with refineries? Well, fine. You can bring that refinery up. There's no fuel. There's no crude stock to go into it.
Right.
You bring the pipeline up. There's no crude to go into it. So the most logical place is the production part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and with that crude oil going up like the
I'm sorry?
Good run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where everybody's concentrating their efforts right now, because you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and once it slips over the bar, getting it back that's a whole different project. So, Stan, what do you hate to even ask, but what are you hearing in the legislature? I mean, are they? It's an election year. They're, you know, driving the state off the cliff. Any awareness at all? I'm guessing no. But
yeah, on the governor's race, they're saying that the environmental groups are backing Steyer and. So if Becerra got elected, then at least we might have some relief, maybe hopefully from CARB, from all the pressure. But I want to kind of go back to a couple of things that you guys were talking about. And unfortunately, you know, I beat on my colleagues all the time on the other side of the aisle about the high-speed rail.
Mm-hmm.
And they're... biggest concern is the reason they won't put any, nobody will raise any cane over it is because big labor is supporting them, and they don't want to lose their support for big labor. So the California state legislature, because of the influence of big labor, will not do anything on the high-speed rail. It's that simple. Then you have the other culprit that you guys were talking about, We have these green, the state of California is being ruined by two things, big labor and the greenhouse gas agenda. And that's why we're in the predicament, because they want legislature wants to have CARB pass all these regs that inhibit oil and gas production. So if you took, we talk about Trump coming in, we could go back to EPA standards and operate like the rest of the refineries in the U.S. That would give them a lot more freedom to operate and a lot more fees from CARB. These greenhouse gas guys are just going to have to step, these green agenda guys are going to have to step aside. Too bad. And big labor let it fall where it may. I think big labor is in most of the refineries anyway, so I would think that they would be fighting to keep them. And fighting for the legislators to influence CARB. But they're not. So I feel like big labor is guilty on both sides. So anyway, that's from where I'm sitting. Those three things, big labor, a greenhouse gas agenda, and CARB, are ruining the oil and gas production and refining in the state.
Yeah.
Any awareness on the legislators' side that maybe CARB has got, gotten a little out of hand?
Oh, absolutely. I've had several meetings. In fact, they asked, I'm the guy on the right, they asked me to speak to the Democratic caucus about the oil and gas. They get it loud and clear, but there's no action.
Hmm. And from the governor's office, any acknowledgement that any of this is a problem? I don't know what, how much you...
No, we're not. I don't hear much. You know, I hear little bits and pieces, but no. According to them and according to the Energy Commission, we have 3 months supply and we shouldn't worry about anything and everything's status quo and everything is fine.
Yeah, don't look behind the curtain.
No, do not look there. All right, we have to.
Well, it's going
to
get really ugly because, you know, we have a situation where Newsom and Trump are not the best of buddies. And Newsom is trying to Trump-proof California.
Right.
So Trump steps in, it's going to be really, really ugly. And I think virtually all the Democrats running for governor want to do the same thing, want to get rid of those refineries. So it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And, like you say, the fourth largest economy in the world, we're in a bubble. And if they decide, you know, it's like jumping out of an airplane. Once you jump out of an airplane, you can't go back.
Right.
You know?
Right. If you forgot to shoot, it's basically too late.
That's right. Gravity wins.
Uh-huh. God, all the time. Isn't that wonderful? It's too bad we can't. Yeah, never mind. I'm going somewhere bad. Better take a quick break before I explore that analogy at scale. We'll be right back with our panel of experts. We are chatting about the California gas crisis that does affect the rest of the country, just in case you were thinking that didn't matter to you. Please go to gascrisis.org, read the letters from the refiners, and especially look at the paper we have highlighted that is their comprehensive analysis on this and how it affects national security. We will be right back.
You made a mistake, you got the wrong guy. I'm only guilty of a damn.
Yes. It isn't a game, though, but they're kind of treating it like that.
Yeah, just because they say it, it doesn't make it true.
What?
Nope, that's a fact.
Don't let that get out.
Nope.
So for people that are following this, who think a lot of this is tied to the Middle East, what would you guys tell them?
Well, look, 20 to 22% of the world's oil moves through the Strait of Hormuz, and the way it's linked is crude oil is a global market. It's a commodity. It's mm-hmm. one of the most beautiful, pure markets you could have ever, because it does work very hard to match supply and demand and reach equilibrium. So that's what we see. But again, even without the Iranian conflict, prices and gasoline prices in California were going to go up, because you have significant regulatory pressure on the refiners. You have dwindling in-state production. You have a collapse of a pipeline. And then you add all the regulatory costs to the price of a gallon of gas. So, you know, Sacramento and Gabby and the gang can scream all they want about it's Trump's war, it's Trump's prices, but the data will suggest something entirely different. And, you know, the other part of this is, you know, when the state says we have 6 weeks supply and don't worry, that doesn't reconcile with what the analysts are saying and what the oil companies themselves are saying. I mean, Exxon themselves came out and said, look, you know, probably in 2 or 3 weeks we're going to hit the wall. That means you're going to have price increases, price spikes, considerable price spikes. And that was consistent with the model that Jamie Rector and I from Berkeley put together. We said, you know, it's going to be in June. We can't tell you exactly when, but it's going to be in June, and you could have some significant price spikes coming through here. So what the state is saying doesn't reconcile with what the independent analysts are saying on Wall Street and what the oil companies themselves are saying. So maybe the CEC and Gabby and the gang have a secret stash of gasoline and oil that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And the likelihood of that is zero.
Well, as Michael Reeser will tell you, he'll tell you all about the tank farm, because we don't have any.
Yeah. I mean, they act like that they could just make all this stuff come out of thin air. Well, we all know that it's more complicated than that. And
I've said this, before. When Valero went down, as we said, Valero January, they actually pulled the plug. Press kept reporting April. No, January 31st, yeah. They pulled feed. 2 days later, your professor got thermal imaging report showing it was cold. It was down. And before February 28th, when that war started, our prices up here, Chico, Hamilton City, Northern California, were up between 70 or 90 cents a gallon, depending on which station you were at. So they were already on their way up because of Valero going down.
What's your guess?
One thing that legislators in California have to recognize is that, you know, yeah, we need crude oil, but crude oil is useless unless you can make it into something. And without the refineries, I don't care how much crude oil you have, California is not going to survive without it. And you're not going to survive without the refineries to make it into something useful.
Well, yeah, that's true. But you have to ask yourself, Ron, do they care?
I don't think they understand.
Well, I don't think they understand, but I also don't think they care. All right, because
everybody's running for governor, and you have people running for, you know, mayor and governor. No one's asking the questions. You know, I tell people I'm 100% in favor of getting rid of oil. What's your backup plan? There's no backup plan.
Well, I don't think Steve Hilton has said that. I don't think Steve said it. Yeah, I mean, I in pretty much contact with Steve a lot, his people.
Right.
I don't think Steve has said that. I think, you know, Steve is in favor of eliminating cap and trade. He's in eliminating the low carbon fuel standard, rolling back the state excise tax, which is the highest in the country, and bringing the price of fuel down there, and then working to increase production. But again, you know, the refinery point that you bring up is absolutely correct. But where do you start?
you know, you can't start with the refinery and work backwards. You have to start with production and work forwards. And so the strategy now is to, unless it's changed in the last 24 hours, is work with increasing in-state production, and we'll figure out, once we get the production going, we'll figure everything else out.
We have talked about the whole Nevada and Arizona issue before, but then we kind of move on. What is their, like, they've got to be in a panic. They're like trapped in the back seat of the car. They can't even get to the wheel. They don't even get to vote for somebody better.
Well, Arizona is better off than Nevada, okay? Because Arizona has a major pipeline going into the state from Texas, and so we're about 38% of their fuel coming from California. So, you know, they're a lot better off than we are.
And they've got refineries. They've got refineries to take care of that oil.
No, they pump in their fuel.
Oh,
they
don't have
they're pumping in jet fuel gasoline. Jet fuel gasoline and diesel from El Paso key to Mexico, yeah. Not crude oil, fuel.
Okay.
Then they're getting, 40%, 38% from us. The state that's the most vulnerable, that's, I mean, absolutely screwed, is Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
They have one refinery which makes asphalt. They have two pipelines that come in from California that essentially are operating at lower capacity today. A pipeline coming in from Washington and a pipeline coming in from Utah. So they are entirely dependent on feeds from other states, but irrespective of what's coming in from Washington and Utah, that's about 12% of their fuel supplies. 88% come from California. And Governor Lombardo has sent several letters, I know, to Governor Newsom. The last one was, gee, thanks a lot. Your people are courteous. They're kind. They're talking to us. But we're still very vulnerable to what you're doing. And I suspect that after the three letters from the refiners came out and went to Governor Lombardo in Nevada, he was losing a lot of sleep at night. So, you know, we call this the California contagion effect, because it affects the neighboring states of California.
That's the one thing that you're not supposed to want to be, is a contagion, right? That's
usually
a bad thing, right?
What's kept California prices moderate? You know, I mean, they've gone up, and again, I'm paying seven. So the three stations that I trade at, 719, 709, and 729 for premium fuel. That was yesterday. But what's kept California prices from going any higher has been actually President Trump. He's done two actions. He suspended the Jones Act, which allows now non-U.S. flag tankers to deliver fuel to California, and which a lot of us didn't count on, is he allocated oil from the United States Strategic Petroleum Reserve to California refineries. We hadn't seen that one coming. We weren't sure whether that was going to be done or not, but he did it. And so those actions by themselves have really, really helped the prices in California. He isn't getting credit for it, but those prices have helped a lot in California. So the release of the oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has honestly, you know, kept some of these refiners in business.
Well,
because we lost so much crude oil that was imported, including 30% from the Middle East.
Yeah, 31% of the oil, 29% came from the Middle East. A lot of it was some of that has been replaced by oil from South America, of course. But the Middle Eastern oil was, you know, gone down to a trickle. And then, you know, California has to now bid against countries like Australia and New Zealand for oil and gasoline. So
California policies, you know, we've abdicated the control of the state to foreign players.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And a lot of us sort of sit back and go, well, what part of this don't you understand, Governor Newsom? And oh, by the way, it's going to sound probably not very nice, but I did offer to pay at my own expense for Governor Newsom to take a class in economics at one of our fine community colleges. He hasn't taken me up on the offer.
Okay, that's fantastic.
But, I'd be happy to pay for that class. Now, and not that I think would do any good. But, these aren't issues that can, that you conveniently talk about in the context of climate change. These are issues that need to be talked about in the context of national security, force readiness, the economy, and, of course, hardworking Californians. You know, people that are taking on two or three jobs, people who are on fixed income, people who are the senior citizens, they get hit hard over this. And as I said in one of my discussions with the legislator, I said, I showed up to take the bullet train to San Francisco, but there isn't any. So, I flew.
Yeah.
I went down to the station.
I'm here.
I've arrived. Where's my $35 billion?
It was supposed to be complete by now, right?
Yes.
It doesn't exist. And as Stan said, it will continue to be the train that's never finished because, big construction is controlling that process right now.
Yeah. It has
some of those big overpasses you see driving down to the Central Valley, they haven't been engineered correctly, and they're sinking into the ground 3 feet, and they have to rebuild them.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it isn't even the Winchester Mystery Train, because even that house is still standing. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So it really is just high-cost rail.
Yeah, and if that
God, that's...
If that's the case,
unbelievable.
Right, then who's accountable for that?
Right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there was millions of dollars spent on that, and there ought to be some kind of repercussions. I mean, if it's all got to be redone... I guess we just get our wallet out and pay for that, too.
Yep. Hey, Stan, just out of curiosity, are there, you guys have caucuses and all these things, so is there one about anything about high-cost rail? Or is that just kind of a foregone conclusion? We're going to have it, and we're just going to keep spending?
It's a foregone conclusion that the left is going to continue to support it because of big labor. End of story.
Okay. And climate change, right? I think that's the fig leaf, right?
Yeah.
Well, hasn't the federal government withdrawn their funds from that project?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I can't remember if it was $8 billion or something, but they pulled their money back.
I think it was $5 billion or something like that. Well, it was a big number.
Yeah.
And the secretary withdrew the funding. I mean, there was a... They did a large and independent audit report of it, and I'll find it and send it out. But it was an amazing report, okay, of just the malfeasance that was involved with this thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you take that much funding away from a project and they just press forward with it? Where are they going to get the money to complete it?
Yeah, and it's already a complete failure.
Us.
Yeah. I guess people aren't tuned in.
There is one way to fix it. There is one way to fix it. The way you fix the fuel shortage and the green agenda and the high-speed rail is you elect some Republicans. We'll fix it.
Yeah, there you go.
People ask me, how do you fix these problems in California? And I said, vote red and get your checkbook out. Quit whining about it. The simple fact is that the Democrats are outspending us and outvoting us, and it's time to change it. And the only way you're going to change it is write a check. Sorry.
Well, weren't they going to do an audit of the high-speed rail and find out where all the money's going? And I think they were kind of implicating there was some fraud involved.
Well, they did that. So I just posted the link for everybody to take a look at.
Wow.
So all their expenditures to this point have been legitimate?
I suspect that's who you, it depends on who you ask, right?
No, that's true.
Yeah, which end of the check you're on.
Well, fellas, it turns out The Who wrote a song about the high-speed rail years ago. They were prophets and seers, and they came up with the perfect song for it. And we'll play that for you right now and then come right back and finish off the hour with our panel experts. We're chatting about the gas situation, and we have... of course, had to speak about the high-cost rail because, well, begs discussion. With an election in the offing in 2 days, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio.
I'm free. I'm free.
Yes. Everybody's a visionary. Take all the old music, play it against the backdrop of today, and it's like, wow, that isn't what we thought that meant. So in our last little bit here, I know we have referenced the election multiple times, but what do you think if people in California do vote in more Democrats to run the executive branch? Any changes in the offing, or more of same?
Well, I think Stan's probably the best position to comment on that, right, Stan?
Yeah, are you talking about Democrats, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm sure
we're done.
I'm sure it happens everywhere, right? But I hear from all these people, oh, I'm going to vote for, you know, Captain Obscurity who doesn't have a prayer chance in hell because he's a wonderful person. And I'm like, oh, stop it. How about let's vote for somebody who can get on the ballot in November? How about that? That'd be a good idea.
Here's the problem. I've said it before. The large metropolitan areas have the major constituency by volume. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they have, you know, most of the legislature. And most of the legislature is blue. And when you, a lot of those folks in those bigger cities think that electricity comes from the wall socket and water comes from the water spout and groceries come from the grocery store and gas comes from the gas station. And they have no idea about all that big, dirty infrastructure that makes their life great. You know, we're out there in the oil field working on drilling rigs, and we're in these refinery turning wrenches, and we're out in the fields, you know, raising grapes and food for the grocery stores, and that takes energy. It might, Professor Mish said it best. It takes the first 8% of our economy is oil and gas. None of this other stuff would happen. You couldn't power all of our water infrastructure without natural gas and electricity. You can't power all of our trucks moving up and down the highway without diesel. You can't get from city to city without jet fuel. So they're disillusioned at best, because they think, well, we want clean air, and we want clean water, and we want perfect. Did you know? I'm sorry, I'm ranting here.
But we like it.
Did you know? We hear all of this CO2 sequestration. CO2 sequestration. Let's spend billions and billions of dollars on CO. Did you know? If you took every bit of CO2 sequestration in the world, it amounts to point. Hear this. 0.0001% of the CO2 in the world. It is the biggest joke we've ever had in our life. But the greenies think, oh, it's great.
Yeah.
But they're not doing anything. It's just no different than Professor Mish said. These ships bring in 4.5 weeks putting polynuclear aromatics into the atmosphere, then they get 12 miles out and they kick over to low sulfur diesel. It's hypocrisy at its best. But they just, unless we get Republicans in, we're done.
Yeah, and I think that,
you know,
point...
Another solution is this movement toward EVs. Because California, we're a big state. We got 400,000 miles of roadway, and fuel taxes, which we've been talking about extensively, raises close to $9 billion, which is used to maintain those 400,000 miles of roadway. So now the big push in California is everybody's been driving EV. Well, EVs are heavier,
mm-hmm.
so they're going to tear up the road more. And EVs pay no fuel taxes because they're not using fuel. And so we're going to be tearing up the roads, and the $9 billion we have right now is going to be diminishing to something less. And so we're going to be faced with mileage tax or higher electricity rates to basically maintain those 400,000 miles of roadway. So that's just another issue that is not being addressed with the change to go to net zero.
Well, that's a real good point that you just brought up, because you have to drive an electric car 122,000 miles before it becomes carbon neutral. If you take all the polymers and copolymers from the plastic that are oil-derived, oil derivatives, if you take the styrene, butastyrene that are in the tires that's oil-derived, if you take the forging of the wheels that are energy-intensive from natural gas, give me a break, folks. $122,000 before it's carbon neutral, it's a joke.
Yeah.
And then that CO2 sequestration you were talking about, Stan, you know, that was the biggest, I'm pretty convinced that was the biggest root of their damn fine they slapped on Valero, because the hydrogen unit generates hydrogen and CO2.
Yeah. The real,
you know, that's what that was all about.
The real,
so the one EV is,
go ahead.
Yeah, the EV is 100% made with oil. All the pieces, parts, the wires, the insulation, the tires, everything that's not, you know, it's not being driven by gasoline. That's the only thing they're eliminating is gasoline. But it's 100% made with oil, except it doesn't need gasoline.
There is one solution, a good, quick, easy solution to CO2 sequestration. Plant more crops, which means more water infrastructure. Guess what? Get rid of a high-speed rail. Put your money into water infrastructure, you greenies, and you'd have all of the CO2 sequestration you needed just by natural agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd need fuel to run tractors for agriculture, so...
Sure do.
We're busy making that a problem.
Yeah.
Well, Mike,
yeah, they know.
Ariza's a farmer. I mean, he'll tell you how much diesel... Mike, what do you run those water pumps with?
Mine's run with electricity, but there's a lot. Most of the ones out in Capay, where our farm is, they're ran by diesel.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Well, all of our, I own a pistachio orchard, and all of our equipment is run by diesel. You know, tractors and disking and spraying and harvesting, everything's diesel.
Everything's diesel.
Yeah, you go back to the Midwest and look at some of those giant farms they have back there. They're all farmed with diesel. I mean, yep. If you don't have diesel, your food supply is going to evaporate.
Yep. Logistically, it will collapse, especially if we lose all these refineries. The Port of L.A. will likely go down. I mean, that's the biggest food importing port in the country, and it stretches into the country.
Mm-hmm.
You lose the diesel for that, it doesn't run. You don't get your food in the grocery stores, and you lose your diesel, you lose your logistics. Cities
Mike,
have 3 to 5 days of the supply. Yes, sir.
Mike, do U.S. refineries make bunker number six?
They make what?
Number six fuel oil bunker.
Some of them do. Every now and then we will. When we were in a partial refinery shutdown, we would make, because we had all the heavier oils that we couldn't run to the units because they were down, we would make bunker out of it.
When these ships come in from like India and they're burning number six oils, do they replenish in the LA port and the Bay Area ports?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, where do they get their fuel when they want to refuel on the way back? Do they get that number six from us?
Yeah. Well, sure.
Well, there you go.
I would think they do. Yeah.
Port
I don't know absolutely for sure, but I would think they do. Ron knows.
Yeah. You know, if they come in, they got to get fuel to go back out.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Right. Their tanks aren't that big. Yeah, exactly.
Hypocrisy at its best, folks. Hypocrisy at its best.
Yeah, the more you learn, the more you shake your head. Why can't anybody figure this out? It's so basic. The pieces themselves.
Simple.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple process. So,
you know, I jokingly refer to people that you can't bring a logical question into this conversation.
Right. So do you think California is still, I shouldn't say California, I should say Sacramento, is still hanging their hat on the idea that California will ultimately be an all-electric state? Is that what's driving all this?
Well, there's these underlying tones that we are going to have an oil and gas crunch, but they're still, all they do is when I see letters from the CEC to the governor or from the caucuses to the governor, it's all pandering about, we've done a great job headed to our destination of zero emissions and we'll continue to move in that direction. However, we may have to get a little more production and help the refineries a little bit until we get there. So their plan, I'm telling you, their plan is still 100% all green, no emissions.
Take them out.
Yeah.
Take them out. Yep.
We had a zero emission society in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. That force is part of methane now. Don't watch it there now.
Okay.
Yeah, don't try to make any sense.
Yep, we'll have to bring back the trusty steed.
The Irish were right. Just put Guinness in our cars and ride a horse, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. And so, I realize this changes all the time, but what do you guys think the timeline is now, since we're here at the last day of the last AMA?
I was wrong. I thought it would be this week, but I was wrong. I think Professor, you guys have probably a better handle on it than I do.
Well, if Trump doesn't step in, I don't see it changing.
Well, I mean, the supply situation will most likely deteriorate, and I think that's what Stan was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And then prices will go up. Probably considerably or potentially considerably. Even if everything ended today, and all of a sudden you could let all the ships into the Straits of Hormuz and everything went sort of back to normal, you're 60 days before that actually has an impact at the pump for the consumer in California.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long it takes. Now, on July 1st, state excise tax is going to go up. We have some potential increases in the low carbon fuel standard. We have a potential increase as a result of the recent cap and trade, cap and investment adjustments. So those are going to go up, irrespective of whatever happens in Iran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think those need to be carefully considered by the voters. But Stan's right. You got to do, you know, if you're tired of this and you're tired of the shenanigans, then you got to do two things. You got to vote, and you got to bring out your checkbook, and you got to bring in people like Steve Hilton. I personally know Steve. He's completely focused. He's super, super smart. And he's a guy that's dedicated to trying to fix the state. So, you know, you got to take a serious look at these people.
Yeah,
and
put somebody at the helm who's actually run some things before and been successful.
And just not bite into the poison apple again of, oh, climate change, and these are bad people, and blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
Come on. Take a look at Pacific Palisades and ask yourself, I was just there 2 weeks ago, and it looks like Dresden after a bombing.
It looks like our fire areas up here that we experience on a regular basis. Uh-oh, fellas, we're out of time. It's happened again.
Why were the reservoirs drained? Why was there enough pressure in the fire hoses, in the pipelines, in the hydrants?
Because that would have made sense to have water in there. We will do this again, I am sure. So, all of you, we really appreciate it. I hope people go on here and look
much
at the archive. It is May 31st, 2026. You can go to gascrisis.org and get all the shows we've done on this topic. Thank you so much.
Look for the bare necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities, Mother Nature's recipe. Bring the bare necessities of life wherever I wander.